Until 11, you're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And it's good morning to program technical commentator Trent Geddes. How are you, Trent?
Excellent. Yourself?
Yeah, very, very good. It's good to speak to you. And what's been happening? I see that there's a new smartwatch which is coming out potentially with Will.i.am.
Yeah, Will.i.am is playing the smartwatch game. He likes to actually call it a smart cuff rather than a smartwatch. He announced at the Dreamforce conference in San Francisco the device, which he's calling the Pulse, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Now, this smartwatch is trying to go one step further with its abilities. So it's going to have voice recognition stuff like the Siri, which is on iPhones, and also Google Now, which is on the Android phones, but it's going one step further in the ability to actually read natural voice commands. So you can actually say a normal sentence rather than a structured sentence which the manufacturer wants you to say to make it do something.
Doesn't Siri theoretically allow you to say whatever you want and it works out, or realistically do you have to say a structured sentence for it to work?
It does in some cases work, but it's not always perfect. So sometimes you have to just structure a sentence to make it, you know, work perfect for you every time.
And is that the Pulse is spelled P-U-L-S without an E?
Yes, the trendy kind of drop a few letters and make a new word kind of spelling.
Yes, but that's the best name for a smartwatch I think I've ever heard.
It's quite neat. It goes with the functions as well. You can do all your SMS and email. You can play music. You can check your social media. And he's even saying that you can make calls from it as well, and you don't have to have a mobile phone tethered to it.
Ah, okay, excellent. Which you obviously have to do with the Apple Watch. I mean, what do you think of the Apple Watch? It came out a few weeks ago. Were you impressed by it?
I'm impressed by the design quality. It looks like it's a very rigid and stable product, and, you know, you can wear it for, you know, countless days across a year and not have too many dramas with the construction of it, because a few of the other brands have not actually been firm in their construction and using a lot of plastic, and I've seen some fall apart. So that was a concern. So I think, you know, the Apple idea is pretty good there.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've noticed is they don't seem to mention the battery life of that Apple Watch. I mean, for me, it's going to be a big deal if you have to constantly plug it in every night and charge it up, wouldn't you say?
There will be charging, you know, in the form of maybe putting it on overnight. I think the battery life is a little bit better than Will.i.am's Pulse, which he says is only going to come in at about 5 hours, which for most of us is not even a full day.
It's got to be a watch that you can wear all day long, doesn't it?
Yeah. You need to be able to put it on in the morning, you know, have breakfast, go to work, come home, do a few things, and still be able to use it, not drop it on the dock as you walk in and not see it for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, that just seems like it's a little bit... It's not going to take off if people can't easily attach it to their wrist and leave it on and have it so it's ready to go whenever they need it. And last week you came on Tuesday, but... after that, there was a big announcement by Apple to do with new iPads, which I know you were talking to other stations about, but because we were early in the week, we missed out. So could you just give us a quick overview of those iPads that were announced?
Yes, so there was iPad updates. They've gone with a new iPad Air, and they've also updated the iPad Mini. In terms of the iPad Mini update, it's only fairly minor. They've actually added the touch sensor, which is in the iPhone 5 and iPhone 6s. In terms of the iPad Air, they've gone with an updated processor. They've improved graphics on the unit and a few other little tweaks, including the touch ID sensor. The sensor as well. So, it's quite a significant step there. And, of course, they haven't actually retired the previous product ranges. They've just reduced the prices on them. So, you know, if you don't need the new feature sets, you could get a bargain there. They're going on sale on Friday.
Ah, okay. Well, I was actually reading an article saying that Apple's really trying to get people to buy iPads and, you know, force people that haven't previously used a tablet to get one, and that they're making it quite affordable. That presumably is one of the older models that's going to be pretty cheap.
Yeah. The reduction in the older models would make it more affordable to get into them now, especially if you look at the Wi-Fi only units. which you can't actually use, you know, on the go unless you're pairing to a Wi-Fi hotspot. You know, they're going for less than $400. So they'd be hoping that a few families would be able to at least, you know, put one under the Christmas tree to get some extra profits in there.
Yeah, and I can see now that phone companies as well are encouraging people to use data across multiple devices. Like I see, for example, with Optus, I think you can share your phone's data plan with up to 5 devices, so you wouldn't have to get a separate plan for the iPad.
Yeah, a few of the providers are now actually offering, you know, things like a bonus SIM card when you sign up to another plan so that you can actually data share a little bit, you know, be able to use it on more devices because, you know, they're getting that sort of feedback from the customers that not every customer is using all of their data every month on a single device. So being able to, you know, spread it across works very well overall and, you know, they keep their customers happy that way.
And do you personally have an iPad?
An iPad?
Yeah. Do you have one?
Yes, I certainly do. Although I went for an iPhone 6 Plus recently and I'm finding that I've reduced my amount of usage on an iPad just because I've got a bigger screen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's just a big hassle to have to carry it around in a bag, I suppose. That's what prevents me from...
That's one of the dramas I have. Mm. You know, the amount of things that I need to carry in a bag in a day, and you want to keep it light so you're not, you know, wrecking your back. And yeah, you know, I just find that the larger screen on the phone, I've been able to make it work.
And man bags aren't socially acceptable yet. So, yeah, we'll have to wait for that to come and be a thing.
That's what some say anyway.
Yes. And Microsoft apparently are having a crack now at some new video messaging, like Snapchat, I suppose, with a new application. Is that right?
Yeah, it's not quite so much a new application. It's a bit of a rehash on a technology which they purchased a year or two ago. It's actually called Quick, and they've brought it into the Skype branding. So it's called Skype Quick now. To use the service, you just need to complete a people registration, as you do with things like Snapchat, and then you can get straight into the idea of sending videos. One of the good things compared to Snapchat is the ability to send up to 42 seconds in length to anyone on your telephone contact list. Now, if they haven't got the application, what it'll do is send a text message and invite them to become a member of Quick so that they can see the video. One thing I like about this service is it's got more security controls than Snapchat does. People have been able to, you know, take videos and photos that people have had on their devices and then been sending around. You can actually store videos for up to 2 weeks. And if you want to delete them as soon as you've sent them, you decide you no longer want to share it, that's fine, you can delete it and it'll disappear from the service completely. So, you know, even if people have had a look at them, they won't be able to see them again. The application is free and you can get it on iPhone, Android and also Windows Phone as well.
Okay, and Facebook now has a new tool, or it's in the process of launching one, that lets loved ones know that you're safe if you're in an area affected by natural disasters.
Yeah, after the tsunami and earthquake events in Japan back in 2011, the Facebook engineers at the time made some sort of bulletin board so that they could, you know, try and help out and keep track of some people. So they've decided to put this new feature into Facebook, if you enable it, which will allow you to let loved ones know if you're safe if you've been affected by a natural disaster. Essentially what it does is any version of Facebook, whether it's on a computer or on a mobile phone, it'll use what they call geolocation services. So
yes,
it will try and locate you based on, you know, where you're positioned, where the computer is telling you that you're positioned. And it'll ask you if you're safe if you're in one of those particular areas that are flagged as, you know, natural disaster affected. And by clicking yes, it will immediately go and notify all your Facebook friends that you are safe. So if they can see Facebook, that'll be fine. So yeah, it'll be a good thing if we've got mobile services in the area or you've got access to a fixed line to do that sort of thing. It's not really going to work out if telecommunications break down, however.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Trent. Always interesting to talk about technology with you. And for more stories, people can go to trent.net.au. Thank you, Trent. Trent Geddes there, technical commentator for our program. He joins us every single Tuesday now.